This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Demers, CPA with Parmelis & Associates. So it's kind of crazy to think about this, but after over 200 episodes, this is going to be my fourth time doing an end-of-year wrap-up, and it will conclude our 2025 podcast year. What better way to do that than to look back and see what we thought was going to happen coming into this year, maybe give some new predictions or current states of things this year, and then outlook for 2026. Before we get into that, I just want to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Reminder, if you want to hear your question answered on here, just have a question for me or an idea for a future episode, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Don't forget my new book, Beyond the Bays, a financial playbook for auto repair shop owners, which was inspired by many of the topics on here and your questions, is now available on Amazon for paperback and Kindle. Want to talk to me about accounting and tax services that Parmelis can offer your repair shop? Shoot us a text at 301-307-5413. And last week, but not least, we cannot forget our dedicated sponsors. If you need to get your back office under control, give Wicked File a call. And if you need to recruit top talent for your top shop, give Promotive a call. Great news. You now have a hiring partner to help you with the heavy lifting of hiring your next superstar. Introducing Promotive, a full-service staffing solution for your auto repair shop. Visit them online at gopromotive.com. Turn chaos into clarity with Wicked File, the AI for auto repair shops. Transform invoices into insights, protect cash flows, and stop losing parts, cores, or credits to maximize your bottom line. Get Wicked File. What are we going to talk about this week? We have three major things to talk about: overtime, ERTC updates, and then interest rate. Not necessarily in that order, but those are going to be the three things that we cover. Like I talked about in the intro to this episode, I've been doing this for 4 years now. Some of this stuff we talked about last year, some of that has changed. There was some stuff that we were talking about last year that we don't even talk about right now. So when I kind of highlight that stuff to not only, you know, probably get some segues from where we think ended up to where they are now, but also just kind of highlight of how little we really know. To start that off, one of the things that we were talking about last year was the BOI report. So around this time last year, the Beneficial Ownership Information Report was kind of announced, kind of a scare tactic. First part of this year of 2025, going down through showing you guys how to fill those out. And then what happened about midway through the year, all of that got thrown in the trash and we didn't have to do any of this stuff. So the BOI report came and went. No one's going to shed a tear on it. And if you're thinking to yourself, well, Hunt, what the heck is a BOI report? Don't worry about it. It is optional. No one does this stuff and neither do you. The other stuff we're going to be talking about this week, though, interest rates and ERTC, were stuff that we talked about last year. And then we get into some of the stuff about overtime and tips and how to make sure that your team is not paying tax on this stuff. That's obviously brand new. I'm going to leave that overtime one kind of to the end on it, not to make you guys listen to all of that. But, you know, this is information for all of you, but this is probably also stuff that somewhat is going to be relevant for your employees as well. When we get to the overtime part, though, I'll try to give you guys kind of a consolidated version where if you want to share this with your team, there's definitely going to be tips on their own personal taxes that you guys can say, go listen to Hunt Spiel for this 2 minute where they kind of explain to your team members how they're going to get this information for overtime and how they're actually going to report this on your taxes. Without further ado, it would not be an end of year update. It would not be a market update if we didn't talk about interest rates. For those of you that have been listening to the podcast for a long time, you know, we have seen quite the swing over the years. If you think about this, we've been doing this over 4 years now. So by the time you guys listen to this, it's probably January of 2026. But we started this back in 2021, I believe. So we went from a period of okay rates to very, very, very low rates for a bit there. And then 2024, we actually saw three increases that brought it up almost a percentage points. And for 2025, for the first three quarters of the year, we had no movement whatsoever. And then three consecutive cuts, October, November, December, and down another 75 basis points or 0.75%. If you want to look at this over a three-year run, if you had something that was a 7% rate in 2023, It went down to a 6% rate and it went down to a 5.25% rate in 2025. Is that really what we are seeing in most people? Like, are you asking me, hey, Hunt, are you seeing other shops that are able to cut their effective interest rates by 2 points over the last 2 years? For new loans, yeah, to a certain extent, we have seen that. For existing ones, yeah, they're just not really updating that much. If you have a floating rate, then all of this stuff is getting updated. But really, when they first started doing this, you know, that was when the interest rates were the highest. Most rates are, you know, have some sort of long-term factor to them, meaning if we think the rates are going to be 38% for the next month and then go to 3% after that, most banks are going to lend much, much, much closer to 3% than 38%. Short-term shocks in the system, definitely taken into consideration. But when we're looking at the most popular debt instrument, which is a 30-year mortgage, what the interest rate is doing this year and next year definitely is taken into consideration as more of a trend. But if you say 2 out of the 30 years are going to be high interest and the rest should be lower, then we aren't seeing as much of an effect. When I was looking at mortgage rates right now and what people are expecting for next year, I think we're seeing in the low 6% on it. I've seen some in the 5%. I've seen some in the 7%. But for the most part, we're looking at the low 6% point. And we're not really sure what the future holds, but a lot of people on the real estate side of it seem to think that we're going to be looking at similar rates coming up. What is going on and what is causing this stuff? So I was an econ major in college. I was not an accounting major. And so this stuff is right in my wheelhouse. There's some pretty unique stuff. I shouldn't say cool. None of this stuff is cool. We're talking about interest rates and the Federal Reserve. They're doing some quantitative easing of having some more activity in the bond market, which we really haven't seen for a long time. From a nerdy economist point of view, it's kind of unique to see different things that the government is trying to do. But more or less, to put this in layman's term, is the government is still trying to do messy with economic policy with one sole intention in mind, and that intention has not shifted, and it's to slow down inflation. You know, I think that the target rate that we're talking about for inflation is below 2%. This stuff is gamed all the time. If you want to use production, inflation, whatever, all of this, arguably we're right at around 4% or so. I mean, some certain places you might see 3%. But right now, from what the Federal Reserve is saying, is they're saying that the target inflation is still 2% and we're still at around 4%. Over this period that we've been doing this podcast, and we've been talking about interest rates and stuff like that, we had some really, really high periods of inflation. We at some point had probably double digits inflation, definitely double digits, and sometimes triple digits in certain categories during COVID. Most of that stuff has been normalized. But the scary part about this is that inflation is the rate at which stuff increases. If we've had massive inflation, if we go from here, hopefully you guys can see this. If you're listening to the audio, I'm doing some stuff with my hands. But if we go up a curve and we say inflation is going up, what that is doing is that's shifting the angle of that curve. If you have very low inflation, your prices are always going to be going up, but at 1% or 2%, it's not that steep. Think about at 1% or 2%, how many years you'd have to go before that price actually doubles. It's a good bit of time. Now, what happens when inflation gets high is it shifts that curve. So if you're at inflation or 1% or 2%, then that price curve is almost flat. If you have inflation that is 10, 15%, or in some of these categories, 100%, like things we saw like lumber and OSB, then what happens to that curve is it goes very, very vertical, right? It shifts up, prices go up, and prices go up very fast. If we're on that flat curve, 1% or 2%, prices can't shift up and down that much. You're probably not going to see a whole lot of correction. But the weird part about what we're seeing now with interest rates and prices is all the Federal Reserve is trying to do is trying to shift that curve down. They're trying to slow down how much prices are growing, but they are not looking for any sort of deflation. Deflation is when you have, or it's the opposite of inflation, it's getting smaller. If the government and the Federal Reserve is trying to slow down inflation, they're trying to level out prices, is that actually going to make stuff cheaper for you or cheaper for me? In a relative sense, it is, yes, because it is going to be cheaper than what it could have been without some sort of market manipulation on it. But again, if you're looking at some of these things, especially going back over 5, 6 years, I think you could say that a lot of these markets and a lot of different industries need a correction. They need some sort of deflation because slowing down inflation is not enough. there is a couple of areas where it's like, hey, the prices on this stuff have tripled over the last couple of years. There's arguably not the same environmental pressures that there were, yet we're still seeing historically high prices when the market is not really justifying that. When you look at the stock market, again, is at record highs, but propped up by a handful of stocks, largely all AI related. If you want to look at the unemployment market, we're seeing some kind of wavy numbers on there. And if you remember us talking about this in the past, that what they're really looking for is specifically the job market. Because if the job market is hot, people are going to try and pay out more and more money. That kind of compounds with inflation. Unfortunately for people, inflation gets under control when the job market is bad and people start losing their jobs or losing their money. And they start, you know, kind of making decisions based on that stuff. If you've been following the reports that have been coming out around the job market, it probably is going to change your tune depending on which one that you've read. The reason I say that is because they release this data and they say, hey, we've gained 200 jobs last quarter, last month. And then a month later, once it's out of the news cycle, they come back with new numbers and say, yeah, we screwed this up. We did not gain 200 jobs. We lost 500,000. I'm kind of joking, but this is literally the stuff that comes out. There's no sort of accountability for some of these numbers. I'm curious of what the Federal Reserve is going off of, because from what I've been seeing on these numbers, if you look at this, it looks good. If you look at that, it looks bad. I think overall, if you're an American, if you're a small business owner, you're in a similar shoes than I am, and you look at the economy right now, and I would say overall the economy is good, but I would be shocked to kind of hear that if I'm in this economy. Kind of a weird thing to talk about, but if you look at this stuff on paper, record high in the stock market, jobs are looking good, you know, inflation is starting to slow down, great. If you want to look at this from an affordability standpoint, I don't think that we've ever been at a worse point. If you look at the average person in the average state can't afford to buy an average home, then something is wrong. When you look at the average person in the average state can't afford the most new cars or afford the payments on a new car, then something happens to happen. What is this looking like for 2026? I don't know. I tried to go back and I tried to see if I had some predictions for last year. And I think I gave you guys a pretty political answer on here of like 2025 was going to be some uncertainties. We are going to see some changes, but maybe not a ton. I think I would probably hit that dead on. If you would have asked me and I would have given you my real answer, which I'm going to give you guys now, I thought that we would probably have some sort of market correction in 2025. At the end of 2024, you know, same kind of idea. The S&P, everything was at kind of at record highs. Inflation was out of control. You know, the average American's credit card debt was massive. The average American's reserves were in the toilet on this. So everyone's broke. Everyone's making less money. Everything costs more and people have less access to capital. It's kind of the perfect storm for a recession, a sort of correction. And in the first quarter, I thought I maybe, you know, had that right. You know, not that I'm wishing for the downfall, but I think in some areas we kind of need a correction. And yeah, first quarter, we had a big pullback. We actually had negative growth in the economy, but that kind of stopped there, right? It was a really, really weird start to the first quarter. And from a, you know, national economy standpoint, I get it. We got wars going on everywhere and there's a lot of issues, but the GDP and the growth of, you know, the actual country has looked really good for the rest of the year. If you went and you talked to the average person, the average American, and just you are your customer, right? So just sometimes you overthink this stuff, right? How do you feel? Do you feel like you're making more money than you did last year? Do you feel like that money can go farther or shorter than it did last year? And do you have a better or worse outlook about the future than you did last year? All in all, not to give you guys a political answer on here, but again, 2026, I'm kind of looking at the same stuff. You know, as far as big things on the map, if you want to look at the automotive space, obviously the shifting of electric vehicles is a big one. If you would have looked at the trajectory of electric vehicles in 2024 versus 2025, completely different, but probably depends on what you're working on. If you're, you know, working on a lot of domestics, you've all seen what happened with Ford Lightning and their gamble there. For that one specifically, I'm not sure if that was a fault of EV or EV technology. I think that they just built a really crappy truck that cannot check the box for anyone. On the same flip side of that, you look at someone like Porsche, and I think Porsche just came out and said that by 2030, majority, if not all of their vehicles will be electric. Yeah, I threw up in a little bit my mouth at the thought of an electric 911, but right, maybe I'm old curmudgeon. I need to get with the times.
Are you tired of spending endless hours searching for the perfect talent to join your team? Promotive is your full service automotive staffing solution. At Promotive, we believe in being more than just a recruiting agency. We become an extension of your team, working tirelessly to ensure we place the right talent with the right shops. With our always be recruiting mindset, we're constantly seeking out the best professionals in the industry. We manage 90 to 95% of the recruiting process, taking the burden off your shoulders. When you partner with Promotiv, you gain a dedicated recruiter and account manager who will work closely with you, understanding your unique requirements and seeking out candidates who fit seamlessly into your shop's culture. We'll ensure that every candidate we present is thoroughly vetted and aligned with your needs. With Promotiv, you'll have a peace of mind knowing that we're handling the recruitment process with expertise and precision. We don't just match resumes, we match character, culture, and long-term success. Visit our website at gopromotiv.com today and experience the power of Promotiv's expertise and dedication. Together, we'll build a stronger and more successful team.
Every month, auto repair shops can lose over $20,000 in uncredited parts, cores, and lost profits. Wicked Files' AI-powered software is a game-changer. It helped one shop owner recover over $10,000 in missed credits, and others have recovered tens of thousands more. Wicked File puts cash back into your business and hours back into your day. Stop leaving money on the table. Visit wickedfile.com to learn more and get started today. We're seeing a lot of shifting. All of that really kind of comes back to the government. We have a government shutdown possibly in January. If you remember, well, I guess depending on when you guys are listening to this, you guys probably have even more information than I do right now. But when we had a government shutdown in the fall, they did not put a permanent spending bill in place. Just temporary until January. And with the arguments going on with healthcare, everything else going on, it does not look great. As far as the overall market, the overall stock market and stuff like that, if you're investing, one of the unique things that to look at is, yes, stock market did really well this year. Nothing did better than, well, plenty of stuff did better, I'm sure, but it's been the best year in a really, 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 really long time for precious metals. The silver market, which I, you know, have been kind of following for years, was very undervalued as you compare it to gold, which always kind of has a tie together on it. So we saw big jumps in the silver market this year. And overall for the precious metal of, you know, gold, silver, and platinum, we saw that stuff double. What does that say? It's kind of hard because gold is always kind of looked at from a utilitarian standpoint and an investment standpoint. Gold is often seen as a hedge against inflation or a hedge against the stock market. Could the price of gold going up kind of show people's concern and fears about the stock market? Yeah, absolutely. But both gold, platinum, and silver all have utilitarian purposes in technology, EV, AI, and stuff like that. So there's definitely some lift on this from a hedge side of the stock market. But it's kind of tricky here, guys, because if you're using this as a hedge for the stock market, and we know that the stock market is mostly AI stocks, if the AI stocks, if the NVIDIA, the chip companies fall, then not only will that kill the stock market, which might help the precious metals, but then if these AI and chip manufacturers are not buying as many precious metals, does that bring it down? I don't know. This is why I said I'm interested in this stuff. I like this stuff. I personally invest in precious metals. I advise a lot of people to. It is a great diversification on here. But yeah, this is kind of all the stuff that's going on. As far as my projection for 2026, who the heck knows? And I'm not going to be the one to tell you. I think that, again, we had a big change over a year in 2024 to 25, going from kind of those good times of COVID, of everyone has more money than they know what to do with. I think for the most part, most people have kind of stabilized. 25 was a tricky year for most people, but 26, I would expect similar, right? I would expect if you've had a decent year in 25, I would not expect you to really see anything different in 26. If you have had a tough time in 25, then I hate to say it, but 26 might be very similar. Kind of refreshing if you look at that of like, you know what, going to get another crack at this. You tried some things, maybe some advertising stuff that didn't work in 25. Hey, maybe try a little bit different strategy in 26 to see if you can get some different results. Overall on mortgages, most people, like I said, are going to think that mortgages this time in 2026, high fives, low sixes. Most people do not expect many major rate cuts, as you can tell by that mortgages. What I was looking at before, it's kind of tricky because you get kind of the worldwide view of it because a lot of people are tied to our interest rates. I think that the consensus on this is 1.5 rate cuts. It looks like kind of two people or two trains of thoughts. Some people say that there's going to be one rate cut and some people say two. Usually when I do a rate cut, it's 25 basis points or 0.25%. really, if we're looking at this, it's not going to be really a massive change. As we've talked about this time and time again, what could happen to accelerate that or make it more or less? It's kind of an inverse relationship to what we want. If the economy is really bad and the job market is atrocious on here, they will start cutting rates and probably cut it pretty quickly. Also, like I said, they have started to do some quantitative easing on their own balance sheet. Will that have an effect on inflation like they're trying to? I don't know. This is kind of uncharted territories on what they're trying to do here and how much it will really affect us. And from a stock market standpoint, you know, here's my prediction. If NVIDIA is doing well in December 2026, so will the American Stock Exchange. If NVIDIA is not doing well or didn't have a good year, neither will the American Stock Exchange. We'll see if that comes true. So if you want a quick snapshot to keep up for next year, I think in 2026 that interest rates will be 0.5% lower than they are right now. I think that the stock market will be overall down compared to the end of 2025. I think that the government will actually shut down again this year at some point this year in 2026, and I do not think that they will get any sort of major changes passed for health insurance. There you have it. Oh, well, one more, mortgage rates, right? So I think mortgage rates are going to end up in the high 5%, right? I don't think we're going to see anything below 5.5% in December of 2026. So see how good I am on these predictions this time next year. I want to talk to you guys about overtime and tips. I want to tell you guys what you need to do, how to do it, give you guys a quick little 2-minute segment that you can share with your team. But when I was looking down through, like I said, guys, this is what I did last year. Want to obviously touch on what I did this year and then make sure that it's kind of still the same focus. So employee retention tax credit. I just have been talking about this on my end of year webinars. People are still asking about it. I said, and I think I jinxed you guys in a good way, right? So you can thank me on this. I said, guys, we're done. Like anyone that has got your money, you got your money. We've talked to some people that are getting kind of frozen out or even some audits on this stuff. But really for months, it had been quiet, quiet, quiet. No one getting any money, no one receiving this stuff until the last month. December, we've seen a good bit people have still received this money. So I think that this is going to continue in 2026. I'm still going to tell you the same thing. If you've got ERTC money, you got your money. There's really nothing that you should be worried about. Some people have been contacted on some audit stuff, but if you had not been contacted, you got your money. Not that no one's ever going to contact you, but you're in a pretty good spot. If you have applied and you receive some of your money, not all of your money, again, I'm not changing my outlook. I still don't think statistically it's a great chance of you receiving it, but that door is not shut. The IRS has tried time and time again to cut this program out. They don't want to do this anymore. They don't want to send you guys any more money. They don't want to process any more payroll tax returns, but it seems begrudgingly at least that they are still doing this stuff. So cautiously optimistic on ERTC if you got it. One of the things that we talked about last year that is exactly the same as this year. If you Google ERTC payment update, you will see that there are ERTC companies that will get your quote unquote frozen money. Whether they call this in advance, whether they say that they're going to sue who did this before and get you your money, I'm going to make a blanket statement out there and say these guys are crooks. These are scams. You are not going to get your money. Hey, you want to argue with me and you want to come back and tell me one of these people that has actually advanced your money, got your money that was frozen before, and didn't do it for exorbitant rate, then fine. I will eat my shirt and I will come on here and apologize. I don't think anyone's going to reach out to me. These guys are the ERTC version of payday advance loans on them. If you need money and you need it fast, there is tons of other options. Do not get an ERTC advance. Why? It's nothing to do with interest rate, guys. Like, you know, there's debt, there's other things around it. I just think that the ERTC is too uncertain. And these guys know it too. And so what they're doing is they're giving you a high interest rate loan that you're hopefully going to get bailed out by the ERTC money. But like I said, you might or might not get that ERTC money. So if you don't get it, all you're left with is a high interest note that maybe if it only works with the ERTC that you might not even be able to pay back. Be very careful on this. I'm an accountant. I'm a CPA. I do this stuff all day, every day. There is no way for me to go get your money faster. And it's not just because I don't know what I'm doing, that the IRS doesn't give us that much power. So anyone that says that they have a fast track to get your ERTC money quicker, that they can skip the line, that they can get this moving along, they are lying to you. Do not believe them and do not send them any money. Okay. Now that I got that off of my plate, let's talk to you guys about something that's really affecting you guys a little bit and some stuff that I want you guys to do here and something that is going to affect your team a lot. Again, if you don't have any sort of overtime, if you don't have any sort of tips, there has been no major changes from an income tax side for this year. If you do have tipped employees or if you do have employees that work overtime, this one is for you. We're going to go down through this section, kind of keep it short, 2 to 3 minutes. I want to give you guys some advice. If you're listening to this and you're a shop owner, and if you're an employee that has been asked to listen to this, then great. I'm going to show you what to do with that information that your boss gave you. We got two different things this year, tips and overtime. No tax on tips, no tax on overtime. We know that there's a bunch of asterisks. There's limitations behind this stuff. I'm not going to kind of get into the limitations on it, but if you make too much money, you don't always qualify for this. Not all tips count, not all overtime counts. Most of you guys that are listening to this are going to be automotive repair shops, and so that probably eliminates the tips. If you're listening to this and you have paid tips in the past, then really nothing has changed. If you've paid tips in the past, then you know that tips get reported on your W-2, I believe in box 7, and that's going to be the same place that they're there this year. So if you are an tipped employer, you already know how to handle tips because you've done it in the past, and your employees already know what to do because it's already been on their W-2. What is the big difference for that employee this year? When they do their taxes, that number is not going to be taxable. This is actually a box on your W-2 for tips, so it's not going to be any additional reporting. There's not going to be anything that them preparing their taxes that are going to look different than the previous year. But if you made $80,000 in 2024 and you made $90,000 this year with $10,000 worth of tips, then you're only going to pay tax on $80,000 and you're going to be paying very similar amounts. From an employer standpoint, though, absolutely nothing that you guys have to do. Your payroll already handles this. It's already going to go into the W-2. It's already going to calculate this. You're golden. You're good. You're easy. That being said, though, if you haven't paid tips in the past and is not customary for your industry, you cannot just go out there and say, I'm going to do tips for all my guys this year. If you did this and you're in a repair shop on this, proceed with caution. The IRS is kind of clear that they're saying, we are trying to give a break to tipped employees. And one of the first and foremost things that we're going to do is look and see if that you guys have had this in the past. If you guys pay out tips for 25 and you had tips in 24 when there was no tax break, you got nothing to be worried about. If you have completely shifted your business model and you feel that this is legitimate that you're paying out tips, fine. But I will tell you that that is going to be a big sticking point when the IRS looks at this. For the rest of you as a repair shop owner and a repair shop employee, your biggest break that you're looking for is on the overtime. What I first want to go into, and I have to clarify this and burst some people's bubbles here, but it is not no tax on overtime, but no tax on an overtime premium. What is an overtime premium? So what the overtime premium is it's the amount that you can actually get a tax deduction for. When you get paid time and a half. Only the and half is actually the premium amount. If you're looking at your pay stub for 2025, and you see that you made $15,000 in overtime, your overtime premium is $5,000 because what you really got is $10,000 that were paid at your regular rate, and then the extra $5,000 came from that half. So if you work 1 hour of overtime and your hourly rate is $10, you're going to get $15. $10 of that is just your base rate, right? An additional hour, it's only the additional $5 that would be your premium. If you are getting paid time and a half and your overtime is reported correctly and there's $1,500 on there, then your premium is going to be $500. Okay. So first and foremost, I have to burst your bubble a little bit that this is probably not as much of a tax break as you thought it was. If you looked at your pay stub for last year, you made $3,000 in overtime. You're only going to get to deduct off of what you pay taxes of $1,000, only that premium amount. What if you're looking at this and you're saying, well, my boss does double pay. My boss does triple pay. My boss does whatever. On these days, overtime is 10 times. It does not matter for tax purposes. We are only allowed to get it on the premium amount. If you got paid overtime, and this is not for most states follow federal guidelines on overtime. But if you're in a state like California, you might have got paid overtime for a state law, not a federal law. So this stuff gets a little bit complicated. If you're an employer listening to this, there could be some research that you got to look at. The tricky part about this is the IRS has given us virtually zero guidance. What they have said for this year is they said, you got to get your employees this information however you possibly can. They don't tell us where it has to be reported. They have been pretty clear is that this will not be on their W-2. Okay, guys? So a lot different than tips, right? Tips are going to be on their W-2. Don't got to give them anything separate. It's all going to be there. For your employees, they're going to have to give this information off of their pay stub. I think like when I was looking up the IRS before, they had a fancier name for this, like it was employee something, but it was essentially like, hey, the employees are looking at their pay stub. You as an employee, you as a business owner, what responsibility do you have for your team? Share this episode with them, guys. Like if you do TurboTax, they're going to ask you about this premium amount. They're going to ask you what's on the pay stub. I imagine that they're going to help you walk through this to make sure that you put the proper amount on there. If you have someone like me or you have an accountant file your taxes, we are going to ask for your pay stub or there's going to be a question, hey, did you work overtime? And you're going to need to provide a pay stub. If you're sitting in here listening to this, if you're an employee, what should you be doing? If you're doing TurboTax, make sure that there's a portion that they're asking you about that overtime. Make sure that you've confirmed with your boss that you have the proper overtime figure on this stuff. And like I said, walk through TurboTax, enter it in there, and you're good to go. If you have a professional doing this, CPA or something like that, you're going to have to send them the W-2 in a pay stub. You've never had to send your CPA in the past a pay stub. If you are working overtime and you do not send them a pay stub, how are they going to know how much overtime you have? It doesn't show up anywhere else. As a last caveat on here, from my own industry standpoint, I could come back and be protectionary and say, guys, this has now made your average employee's tax return too complicated. If you use TurboTax in the past, don't do it. No, it's going to add some confusion here. It doesn't add any technical aspect to this. If you felt comfortable doing your return in TurboTax, then none of these tax law changes will make me think otherwise. Make sure it's in there. Make sure you ask questions. As the boss, make sure you mention this to your team. Make sure you give them the pay stubs and they know where to find this. As always, please share with friends. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episode, shoot me an email at podcast@parmalis.com. Thanks for listening on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. You can find the rest of the shows on the new Automotive Repair Podcast Network app and on the rest of your favorite podcast listening apps. So thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I will talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Have a question for Hunt? Check the show notes for Hunt's email or text Parmelis at 301-307-5413.